Welcome to At the Whiteboard. I'm your host, Joe Menachino. In this week's episode, we talk all things sleep with Dr. Stuart F. Kwan. Dr. Kwan is a Gerald E. McGinnis Professor of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School, a senior physician, Division of Sleep and Circadian Disorders, Departments of Medicine and Neurology at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. He's the editor of Sleep and Health Education Program. He's also the Professor Emeritus of Medicine, University of Arizona College of Medicine. Dr. Kwan has countless publications. He's also a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the Sleep Research Society, and the American College of Chest Physicians. I'd like to welcome Dr. Kwan to this week's episode.
If you don't mind, could you just tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. My name is Dr. Stuart Kwan. I am the McGinnis Professor of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School. And I am the clinical director of the Division of Sleep and Circadian Disorders at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And so I'm both a practicing sleep medicine clinician as well as doing research in the area of sleep health, the epidemiology of sleep disorders. And I have a particular interest in sleep-disordered breathing or sleep apnea.
Okay, awesome. So like I mentioned earlier, I just have a couple quick questions. Can you kind of explain to us the different types of sleep? I know we have REM. Is there other, what are the different types of stages of sleep, I guess they would be called?
So sleep is not a single state. It consists of several stages. When you go to bed, you first go into a light sleep, which we call stage N1, and then a little deeper sleep, which we call N2, and then very deep sleep, which we call N3, and then at some point about 60 or 90 minutes later, we go and have stage R or REM sleep. And this cycle of sleep stages occurs throughout the night, every about 90 minutes or so. You get about 4 or 5 of these throughout the night. There is a little change in their composition as you go through the night in that N3 sleep kind of diminishes throughout the night, whereas REM or stage R sleep increases during the night.
Okay. That's interesting. Is there a way we can get better REM sleep? Is there a way to do that?
Better REM sleep. Well, I think getting better sleep overall is the best way to get better quality REM sleep. There is no particular advantage of getting more REM sleep.
Okay.
What you want is basically good sleep and a proper amount of percentages of various stages of sleep in your overall sleep.
Okay, that makes sense. Another word that we hear a lot when it comes to sleep is the circadian rhythm. Is that something you can explain to us?
Sure. Well, sleep and wakefulness, that is when you're awake and when you're asleep, is controlled by two forces. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit. The first force, so to speak, or factor is your homeostatic sleep drive. The minute you wake up in the morning, you're least sleepy. And absent anything else happening, you get progressively sleepier throughout the day. And in fact, if it wasn't for your circadian force or drive, so to speak, you would fall asleep after a few hours after you wake up. So as the homeostatic sleep drive continuously increases throughout the day, it is counteracted by a circadian force, so to speak.
Okay.
And that basically keeps you awake until maybe 10 o'clock when you, most people generally fall asleep. So at that time, basically, their circadian force cuts off, and that leaves the homeostatic sleep drive unopposed, which means then you fall asleep. And then once you fall asleep, the homeostatic drive is gradually dissipates, so then in the morning it is at its minimum.
Okay.
And because it's at its minimum, and therefore basically then you wake up in the morning.
Okay. So understanding that then, so there's a definite advantage to falling asleep at the same time every day. And what I mean by that is, if we were to, let's say on the weekend, stay up later, that would kind of throw off that rhythm, right? And is that why we feel sometimes tired?
Yeah, so better sleep is obtained when you keep a regular schedule. You're absolutely right. People who stay up late on weekends, basically what you're doing is you're throwing off your rhythm, and it's actually, there's a term for it, kind of when people, there's this pattern of people who actually, you know, don't sleep enough during the weekday and then try to catch up on weekends.
Right.
That perhaps is not directly answering the question. That is actually called social jet lag.
Social jet lag. Okay.
So that's just like people who are jet lagged.
Okay.
But to your question about, you know, staying up late on weekends, you know, that's not good. Studies have shown that regularity of sleep schedule is almost as important a factor in getting good quality sleep as the amount of sleep that you actually obtain, actually duration of sleep.
Okay. So yeah, I've heard that term social jet lag, and I think I'm guilty of that because I normally go to bed early, but on Friday, Saturday, you know, I stretch that out and definitely feel it the next day. Can you catch up on sleep? In other words, like if I'm super tired throughout the week, like you said, on the weekend, sleeping later, will that, can you actually catch up and say stockpile sleep if you know you're going to have a busy week ahead, something like that, if that makes sense?
So if you're chronically sleep deficient, then you can restore or reduce your sleep deficiency by sleeping more at a later date.
Okay.
It's not that if you accumulated a 25 hour sleep deficit, you can restore that by sleeping more on a few days. You don't have to sleep 24-5 hours more, but you.
Okay.
However, you can't actually bank sleep.
Okay.
So if you say, oh, I want to be only sleep 5 hours, you know, per night for the next week, you can't go and try and sleep 25 hours ahead of time to make up for the 25 hours you didn't get. You're not going to get the following week.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I know, that was kind of always, I was always wondering that if you could do that. Can you tell us some of the health risks that are out there because of lack of sleep?
Yeah, there's increasing evidence that sleep deficiency is associated with increased risk of hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, among other things. And actually, it is associated with increased mortality.
Really?
Yeah.
Not to mention getting cranky.
Right. Yeah, there's mental health deficits as well. I mean,
yeah.
Increased risk of depression, increased aggression, poor judgment,
Wow. The list goes on. This one's for all of us, but especially I'm targeting this one for my daughter. How do our devices, phones, tablets, et cetera, how do they affect our sleep? And piggybacking on that, is there a recommended time that we should stop with those devices before bed?
Yeah, so most devices have light, and particularly blue wavelength light. And basically, you mentioned circadian rhythm in the past. One of the things that actually time the circadian rhythm is the secretion of this hormone melatonin from the pineal gland. And blue light suppresses the secretion of melatonin. Any light does, but blue light in particular. And so this will make it harder for you to fall asleep and so disrupt your circadian cycle. Not to mention the fact that if you're on a device and you're like playing a game or something like that, once you pick it up, you're likely to want to continue playing for a while.
Right.
So that behavior in itself will tend to delay your bedtime. And so if you delay your bedtime, then most of the time your wake up time hasn't changed because you have to go to work or go to school, so that stays the same. So if your bedtime is delayed and you're getting up at the same time, therefore your total amount of time you have allocated for sleep becomes deficient.
All right. Okay.
So in particular, your daughter, I take it, is a teenager.
Yeah, she's 16. Plays
Yeah.
with her phone.
So adolescents in particular are susceptible to this because when children become adolescents, there's a normal delay in their circadian cycle. So absent any other factor, adolescents will tend to want to go to sleep later, just naturally.
Okay.
And so when you combine the natural tendency to want to go to sleep later with the use of the device and any other social behavior that's occurring, such as wanting to talk on their cell phone with their friends in the middle of the night or texting, you can see where they go to bed much later than they should be going to bed. Yet high schools generally start too early, and that causes, therefore, sleep deficiency. In fact, most high schools shouldn't probably even start until 8:30 in the
Wow.
morning.
Yeah.
Yet they probably, most of them start much earlier than that.
Yeah. She starts. I want to say 7:15, maybe somewhere around in there.
Yeah, so that's much too early, and it's been shown actually that resetting the high school start times till later improves academic performance and reduces depression among adolescents, which is a significant problem, of course.
Yeah.
Suicide rates and stuff within adolescents is a particular health problem in the United States and other places. And so you're improving academic performance by delaying school start times, reducing depression. In addition, so that actually is a significant problem and has a potential cure if you actually do that.
Wow, that's
Delay
interesting.
the start times. And not to mention the fact there's evidence also that adolescents who drive, there's an increased rate of motor vehicle accidents because of the early start times as well.
Wow, huh. I never would have guessed any of that. I kind of figured because of the early start time, the sleep thing, but I didn't think about the rest of the effects. That's
But most school boards actually are against it.
really. Yeah, I
And
mean,
parents actually.
I also have a 6-year-old, and I always thought it was funny. I like, and she starts at 9:30, and I always thought they should be switched because the 6-year-old is up early, and the 16-year-old is up late. I always thought their time should be switched for school. That would make more sense to me. But yeah, the elementary school starts super late. What are so? Is there a time we should stop With our devices, I mean, I more than likely can't keep it from her. So what are some guidelines we can use to kind of, is it 30 minutes or is there a time that would help?
Before yeah, that? A couple hours.
Really? Wow. Okay.
I would probably use it before, stop sometime after, you know, 8.
Okay. Awesome. All right, so let's talk. We talked about the devices. What about drinks like caffeine, energy drinks, alcohol, things like that? Like, oh, I always have a glass of wine before bed. Do they affect our sleep?
Yes. So alcohol actually has, you know, you say that you get a nightcap. You know, everybody heard of that. You know, take a nightcap. So alcohol does make people sleepy. It makes me sleepy. But is very sleep disruptive. So it may make you fall asleep earlier, but it disrupts your sleep later on in the night. So I don't know about you, but if I have a drink, I may go to sleep fast, but I'll be up at 2 a.m. in the morning, unable to go back to sleep.
Right, okay.
Caffeine, of course, is a stimulant and has a long, pretty long half-life. So actually, so if you're out to dinner and you have a cup of coffee after dinner, like you do at most fancy restaurants, they ask you like a cup of coffee with your dessert, you have a chocolate dessert and a cup of coffee, that's going to keep you up. There may be effects of caffeine as long as 6 hours after you drink.
Really? 6 hours? So that was kind of my next question. Is there a time before bed we should stop drinking these? I've always heard like you shouldn't drink caffeine after, you know, after noon or something like that, but that would make sense with the 6 hours. So.
And of course, nicotine, well, you shouldn't be smoking anyway.
Right.
And vaping is the same thing. It has nicotine. And so nicotine is a stimulant. It's not going to help you sleep.
Okay. Great. All right. So let's talk about how much sleep we need. Is there a recommended for, let's say, toddlers, kids, and adults that we should be getting?
Yeah, this is specified and you can get it. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine, as well as the National Sleep Foundation, have put out guidelines for healthy sleep. But adults should get at least 7 hours of sleep per night is the recommendation. Your teenage daughter should probably get 8 to 9. I'm sure she doesn't get it.
No, nowhere near it.
And, you know, school age kids are in the, you know, 10 hour range. You know, infants, they're at 14 hours, you know.
Okay. Awesome. All right, so what about this? I'm sure you've heard it. I know I've heard it from people. I feel best with blank hour sleep, 5, you know, 6, 4, something like that. Is that true? I mean, are there different instances where that may be true?
There is a bell-shaped curve. Some people do better than others with different amounts of sleep. I will say, however, that there is substantial research to show that people are very poor judges of how sleepy they are.
Okay.
For example, if I gave you a performance task to complete and just kept you up, eventually your performance on the task would deteriorate the longer you're awake, but your judgment as to how sleepy you are actually deteriorates at a much slower rate.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, we always think we're doing better than we are. That's for sure. What about some of the sleep technology, like sleep trackers and coaches? Like, you know, we have the iPhone, different kinds of apps. Do they work that you know of? And I'm just kind of curious if you know how they work.
Most devices that purport to track your sleep, most of them use, they have an accelerometer in the device. And so they track motion. So by tracking motion, it presumes using different algorithms that If you're moving around, you're awake. If you're not moving around, you're asleep. And they're actually relatively accurate for detecting whether you're awake or asleep.
Okay.
The ones that say that you're in certain stages of sleep are most of the time not very accurate.
Right. That's what I was curious about. Yeah, because some of them, I know there's a few devices in the gym, in the fitness world, like this Whoop Band and things like that, that actually say, you know, I had 3 hours of REM sleep or whatever. And I was always curious kind of how they knew that.
Well, there are various physiologic parameters that suggest when a person is in various stages of sleep. But whether these devices can actually track them accurately is a different story. Very few of the devices actually on the market, there are some exceptions, have not been validated against, you know, a real sleep study.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. Let's kind of shift into some bedtime routines. Is there an optimal, we love that word, it seems like nowadays, is there an optimal bedtime routine? Should we do certain things like just joking around, like the nightcap, right? Things like that. Is there certain, we just said we shouldn't do that, but are there things we should do before bed to kind of wind down a little bit before?
Yeah, I think that what you don't want to do is something that is gets your heart rate rolling and you know, gets you energized. You want to actually relax. So having something, a regular routine is important, but you don't want to be doing something that's going to be activating.
Gotcha.
So I think that's the most important aspect of it.
So something that calms you down, like reading.
Reading would be fine. Although we generally don't recommend people read in bed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it actually, you're awake. This is especially true of people having difficulty sleeping. You want to reserve the bedroom for only sleep and sexual activities.
Okay. So that's, okay, so it was interesting because I heard somewhere in another podcast, and this that kind of ties into that, where if you can't sleep, I remember someone saying, get up and get out of bed, and then once you feel sleepy, go back to bed.
And you don't want to tie the bedroom environment to the perception that you're not sleeping.
Oh, okay, that's awesome. All right. What about room temperature and bed temperature? I'm starting to see now a lot of things like these air-conditioned mattresses. I guess they are comforters. You know, keep the bed at 67 degrees. Are those known to be helpful, or is there a temperature?
Well, the temperature at which you want to sleep is an individual thing.
Okay.
Generally, people want to sleep between 65 and 70 degrees, but okay, it's an individual thing.
It is, okay. Yeah, because again, that's one of those things. And again, we talk in the fitness business, we always like to throw around the word optimal, you know, so that was always the, like you hear people say like, oh, 67 is the optimal, which would make sense because that's right in the middle there of the 65 and 70. So that's great. And of course, I imagine the best environment, we want to be like totally blacked out room, I guess, no light at all.
Yeah, well, you don't want a lot of light. Dark is good. Sound is bad. You know.
So no sound wave listening to the ocean, like machine, sound machine?
Well, some people find that they need a little white noise or something.
Right.
So that's individual, but generally, but you don't want to be, you know, have an apartment next to a railroad tracks. I mean.
Gotcha. All right. So we'll talk a little bit about jet lag if we can. We have a lot of people that travel frequently for work. Is there a best way, can jet lag be avoided? And is there a way to kind of help adapt to jet lag?
Well, probably not totally.
Okay.
So jet lag is the discordance between what time zone your body is in and what time zone you are actually in. Right. Okay. So it turns out that it only occurs in people who are rapidly traveling. So if you were in the Wild West in the 1800s, there was no jet lag because the time it took you to travel from New York to St. Louis was relatively slow.
Okay.
So it turns out the travel from west to east is worse than east to west. If absent doing nothing, you would adapt to your new time zone about each time zone is probably one day's worth. It would take. So, and traveling, that's west to east. East to west is probably a half a day per time zone. Now, I tell people, like, if you're traveling to Europe, it kind of depends. Because, like, here on the East Coast, there most of the flights to Europe take off at in the evening, and then they arrive the next morning, European time. So if you're traveling from, say, Boston to Paris, that's about, I think, 6 hours. Maybe it's 7.
Okay.
But in any event, if you arrive in Paris, if you leave Boston, at 9 o'clock, you might be arriving in Paris, who knows, 10 a.m., but it's probably only 3 a.m. your time. Your body thinks it's 3 a.m., right?
Okay.
So I tell people actually to wear sunglasses in the mornings when they get off the plane for a couple days in the mornings, and don't get bright light exposure till about 11 or local.
Okay. So you're kind of fooling your body to think it's still dark
out. Because the light is the biggest thing that changes your body clock. So you want light exposure at the correct time. And so getting light exposure when you get right off the plane is the wrong time, whereas it's much better. It will accelerate your adaptation later on.
Okay. That's awesome. It's a good little tip. Wear sunglasses. Okay. Great. kind of moving on. How does physical activity affect sleep? And can we use exercise to help us get a better night's sleep?
People who exercise regularly tend to sleep better.
Okay.
But I generally tell people not to exercise close to bedtime.
Okay. You get that kind of the endorphin rush, right? And hard to,
right.
to back,
you don't,
back down.
Although actually the evidence studying this is actually not great.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. What can we do throughout the day to help get a great night's sleep? Are there things that we can do throughout the day to kind of set us up for success?
Well, you don't want to take naps. If you're trying to sleep at night, you don't want to take naps because you're going to decrease your sleep drive.
Oh, so, that just hurt, Dr. Kwong. I'm a napper. That one.
I mean, it just decreases your need to sleep at night.
Okay. All right. No, I do. It was funny because I always tell people, that was actually my next question, was a nap during the day helpful or does it hurt sleep? Because I'm a big fan.
Well, it doesn't hurt to sleep. It just means that you're going to want to sleep less at night. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you live in Mexico or Central America or Southern Europe, they frequently nap in the afternoon. If you actually have been over there, basically the stores tend to close during the siesta time and they open later in the evening. They stay open till midnight and people
really?
Don't eat dinner till 10.
Okay.
So it kind of depends on your culture, but if you want an American lifestyle where people are awake during the daytime they sleep basically from 10 to whatever, then you're not going to want to nap in the afternoon.
Okay, which actually that helps, what you were talking about actually helps kind of my schedule with the gym, because we're coaching till 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. We don't eat dinner till 9 or 10, you know, later in the evening. So it actually, in my case, it may actually help me a little bit. Awesome, that's good to know. All right, so next one. When we're tired, is there a best way to wake up and stay awake? Like, you know, can you drink a lot? And we probably shouldn't drink coffee probably to wake up. But is there something we can do to kind of wake us up and keep us going? Does that make...
Well, when you wake up, you can just be active. I mean, it's nothing special about that. Really.
Sorry about that.
You know, people naturally may have difficulty waking up. There's this thing called sleep inertia.
Okay.
Which basically says that you don't go from sleep to wake instantaneously. It takes time to get your brain moving again and to kind of start the engine up. And that is a greater amount of time for some people versus others. And it's more of an issue if you're awoken in the middle of the night when you don't want to be woken up. But other than that, I think basically you just need to get yourself moving. And
gotcha. So yeah, there's some people like, I can't function without that first cup of coffee in the morning, but they just got to get up and get moving a little bit. Awesome. All right, so kind of wrapping this thing up here, I won't take up much more of your time. So let me just ask you, can you give us a couple of takeaways that we can use tonight to help us get a better night's sleep?
Well, I think the most important thing that people should take away is that sleep is important for one's health, and that there basically is no substitute to getting an adequate amount of sleep. And the most important thing they can do is allocate a sufficient amount of time to be in bed trying to sleep. The most common cause of basically daytime sleepiness and poor performance related to sleep deficiency is because people sacrifice sleep for other activities.
Okay.
So people have a choice usually. They, for example, you have a choice between watching the late night TV shows versus sleeping. You have a choice between watching the NBA playoffs and sleeping. You need to realize that if you make the choice to watch some TV late at night or go out to the club or whatever late at night, and basically, you know, cut your sleep short for that night, there's a price to pay. And it's basically on you. And if you chronically do that, you'll be chronically sleep deficient. But most of it is personal choice.
Right. Right. Which I was just thinking of, I know, like, again, using my daughter as an example, she has a TV in her room, which we probably shouldn't have TVs in our rooms.
Yes, it should be removed.
Yeah, that's setting up for failure right there, for sure. So, well, that was great. All right, so can you give us a couple, maybe a website we can go to for some more information about sleep?
You should go to www.understandingsleep.org.
Understandingsleep.org. Awesome. All right. What about a book? Is there a book you would recommend?
Oh, there's several books. There's a book published by the Harvard Guide to Better Sleep or something. It's authored by a colleague of mine, Dr. Lawrence Epstein, Epstein.
Awesome. I'll put that in. All right, Dr. Kwan, I do have one more question before we end it. What about, can you talk to us a little bit about athlete performance and sleep and how sleep affects performance?
Yeah, so it turns out that Sleep's very important for athletic performance. A number of studies have shown that athletes who are deficient in sleep perform less well. For example, a study was done in tennis players in which they compared tennis players who only got 5 hours of sleep versus those who got 7 or 8 hours of sleep, and found that the first serve percentage in those who were sleep deficient was not as high as those people who got adequate amounts of sleep. Conversely, there's a classic study that was performed on the Stanford men's basketball team. As you know, Stanford's a Division I basketball school, and so these are pretty high caliber athletes. They showed that these athletes were relatively sleep deficient, and then also they were asked to extend their sleep, get more sleep, and they tested them before and after sleep extension, and they found that the ones after sleep extension, their 3-point percentage on testing improved, their free throw percentages improved, their sprint performance improved, and and it's only like, you know, a few percentage points, but if you think about it, there are a lot of basketball games that are only decided by 1 or 2 points.
That's true.
And so it just basically illustrates the impact of sleep deficiency on one hand and the improvement you can get if you're sleep sufficient. And this has been increasingly recognized by professional sports teams. And many professional sports teams actually hire sleep consultants.
Okay.
Because they're traveling across time zones and stuff like that, especially like the baseball and basketball teams. And it's very important for them to get adequate amounts of sleep so that they can perform at their peak of their abilities. For example, Andre Iguodala, the Golden State Warriors, actually he's now with the Memphis Grizzlies, I think, got traded. But he's a very, you know, strong proponent of getting adequate amounts of sleep.
That's awesome, and I know I believe there was a study or something that was done that showed like when NFL teams went to the West Coast, those teams that traveled actually have a higher losing percentage because of the time zone shift and the lack of sleep and things like that.
Actually, I think it was baseball teams.
Was it baseball? Okay. I know it was someone when they traveled to the West Coast had a higher losing percentage. Is there and this may be just, I don't know if you can answer this, but we always kind of ran on the thing of the best sleep you can get would be like the night before your game, because you wouldn't be as anxious. You'd be a little nervous the night before. So like that, the real critical sleep is kind of 2 nights before your event. Does that make sense, or you know anything about that?
I think it's just basically good practice to get a good night's sleep every night.
Every night, yeah, that would make more sense for sure. So that's great. All right, good deal. Well, yeah, that kind of answers that question for the performance side. So again, I thank you for that. So great. Well, we'll just keep recording in case something else comes up as we're talking. But again, Dr. Kwan, I really thank you for taking time out of your day and doing this with us. So.
Oh, you're quite welcome. By the way, since you're a coach, I might mention that my son actually is a strength and conditioning coach.
Really?
Yeah, he's the head strength and conditioning coach for California Baptist University.
Wow, awesome. I'll definitely have to...
They're a new mid-major in Division I.
Okay. What was that again?
Cal Baptist University. They play in the WAC.
Cal Baptist. Okay, great. Awesome. Yeah, my mentor's been I own a gym. My mentor's been in the NFL for 30 or 40 years as a strength coach, about 30 plus years. So he gets... We know through him, I've met a lot of strength coaches, and they're just they're such awesome people. They're amazing. Strength coaches are special guys for sure. So love hanging around them. So we'll definitely take a look at it. Well, again, I won't take up much more of your time. I just want to thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, if you could send me a a link to your podcast, I'd appreciate it.
I certainly will. Yeah, once I get it edited, it's probably going to come out in a couple of weeks. I got a couple ahead of you. It gives me, with my schedule, I don't have much time to edit and get things out right away. So I have to take a little bit of time to, especially this one, that we added that question. I'll have to figure out how to move that in. But I'm a much better coach than I am with technology. So I'm getting better at it, though.
All right.
Cool. All right, sir. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of Beyond the Whiteboard. Thanks to this week's guest and sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out fortitudefs.com, where you can find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned and information about Fortitude Fitness. If you haven't subscribed to Beyond the Whiteboard on iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Beyond the Whiteboard.